You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome. Tom Hartman here with you live on 9/11 on Sirius XM Satellite Radio and on Free Speech TV on DirecTV and Dish Network. And it is 9/11. We are broadcasting live from Washington, D.C. Jacob, I just put two calls on hold. I think you're going to have to turn the ringer on over there so you know when people are calling. And so, anyway, our telephone number is 866-987-THOM. 866-987-TOM, T-H-O-M, 866-987-8466 for our Sirius Satellite listeners. And also 866-7, if that, those lines are busy, 866-745-2667. So today, as I said, is 9/11. We're going to do a three-hour live program here. And I really wanted to do this not so much as my grand theory of 9/11. I frankly don't have one. I have a lot of questions about 9/11. You know, why was it that when George Bush was told this is the number one thing you need to pay attention to, that he basically didn't? Why was it that when Dick Cheney, Sandy Berger, I met with Sandy Berger shortly after Bush was inaugurated. He was the national security advisor for Bill Clinton, and he told me face to face. There were about four of us there. He told me that he had told Condoleezza Rice, the incoming national security advisor, that, you know, very simple, very straightforward, that Osama bin Laden's coming to get you. And now we discover that one of the reasons, oh, and Sandy Berger also told me that he knew personally that Al Gore told Dick Cheney the same thing and that Bill Clinton told George Bush the same thing. And now we know that there was a memo back in 1998 that was given to Bill Clinton saying that Osama bin Laden was planning on hijacking planes inside the United States. So it's not like this was anything new. In fact, it turns out that that memo was mentioned in the presidential daily briefing that George W. Bush got on August 6, 2001, when he just decided he was going to go fishing. I mean, literally, that's what he did. He said to the guy, "Oh, you've covered your ass," and then he went fishing. He took a pause from clearing brush to go fishing. And back in the 90s, when Bill Clinton tried to kill Osama bin Laden, you recall, you know, there's all this screaming about, oh, he's trying to wag the tail, you know, the dog. I mean, after he got that memo that bin Laden was going to hijack planes in the United States, that's when he tried to bomb bin Laden's camp in Pakistan or in Afghanistan with three cruise missiles and missed him by 30 minutes. And the Republicans were on the floor of the House, you know, screaming and yelling about this. So anyhow, let's get, yeah, I'm curious about your thoughts. There's a lot of questions. I don't claim to have any answers. I don't put myself in any particular camp. Lamar Waldron and I spent 17 years researching the Kennedy assassination. We think we got some answers, but it took 17 years. It's only been 10 years since 9/11. And by the way, that was not just our work. That was our work standing on the shoulders of other people who had been doing work for 30 and 40 years. So who knows? Paul in South Carolina. Hey, Paul, what's on your – or California, rather. What's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. Well, I'd like to talk about the PNAC agreement and how the people that wrote the PNAC agreement were pretty much major players in his cabinet. And then you have the Patriot Act.
Yeah, let's just scroll back a little bit, Paul, for our viewers or listeners who may not know what you're talking about. PNAC was the Project for a New American Century that was created back in the, I think it was in the 1980s, was it not, by Bill Kristol and his neocon buddies?
It was started in the 80s and finished in the early 90s.
Yeah, and in 1998, wasn't it, they wrote a letter to Bill Clinton saying, we want you to invade Iraq and it's going to take a Pearl Harbor-like event.
Yes.
And that letter was on their website up until about a year and a half ago. I mean, it was no secret. Yes. They bragged about it. And it was signed by Don Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney and a whole bunch of other folks who you probably know the names. It's been several years since I read it.
Pretty much Bush's cabinet.
Yeah, okay. Well, I know it was those two, out of Bush's bunch. So, and so what's the, You know, what's the
well,
therefore?
I think it's
kind
of funny that they. I truly believe that 9/11. Amy Goodman did a really good series about 9/11 on things that happened on that date, bunch of different things. And if you really notice one thing about them, they're all lies. You know, they all started off as one thing and then found out it was a total lie.
Yeah.
Kind of interesting.
Yeah.
It really kind of is. And there's a lot of unanswered questions about 9/11. And if you bring these questions up, people call you a traitor.
Yeah.
And stuff like that.
Or a paranoid.
Kind of interesting, too.
Yeah, or a truther or a birther or whatever, you know.
Yeah, or something like that. I mean, I think any American that looks at 9/11 with an objective...
Paul, your phone is breaking up. I'm sorry. But I got your point, and I'm with you. William in Baton Rouge. Hey, William, what's up?
Hey, Mr. Tom. I go with the same thing, questions about 9/11. You know, like Ray McGovern was good enough to bring the presidential briefing to six or seven presidents.
Mm-hmm.
But all of a sudden, somebody came in and didn't want to hear from him anymore.
Yeah.
And then Colonel Ann Wright, you know, she kind of left out of the Pentagon because she said you couldn't find any parts of the airplane that was supposed to be in the Pentagon.
Yeah.
That it looked more like a Scud missile.
Well, yeah, and I've heard that theory at length and the couple times we've talked about it on the air, but there were hundreds of people on the highway who saw that plane, you know, and lots of testimony of people who said that they saw the plane hit the building. People who were on the plane who are identifiable. One of them was Ted Olson's wife, I believe, which probably you could turn into a great spy novel if somebody wanted to get rid of their wife or not. I don't know, but you know, not about Ted Olson, but you know, that kind of a scenario. But you know, if it wasn't that plane, then where'd the plane go? Where'd the people go? I think aluminum burns at a fairly low temperature and disintegrates fairly quickly. I'm not with the Scud missile theory personally. I mean, I haven't totally ruled it out because I don't pretend to be a 9/11 researcher. But I think that, you know, I'm more frankly, you know, whether or not the buildings were controlled up in demolition or whether or not there was, you know, some missile that hit the Pentagon or all that kind of thing. I'm more concerned about why is it that Bill Clinton was aggressively trying to take out Osama bin Laden because he knew that Osama bin Laden was coming after us. Why was it that bin Laden in 98, about that same time that Bill Clinton was trying to go after him, bin Laden was telling us that he was going to come after us if we didn't do two things. If we didn't take our soldiers out of the Prince Sultan Air Force Base, who Bush's daddy had put there for the first Iraq war, for the first Gulf war. And he was, you know, he said they're defiling the holy land of Saudi Arabia. You know, it's the holy land of Mecca and Medina. It's that you got men drinking alcohol and watching pornography and women driving in cars and showing their elbows. And number two, his second demand was that the price of oil go to $100 a barrel, that we stop basically extracting the resources of Saudi Arabia and paying them squat for it. At that time, you know, oil was 25, 30 bucks a barrel, or maybe even lower than that in 98. And, you know, Obama, bin Laden got both those things during the Bush administration. George Bush pulled, you know, he closed the base. He pulled all the soldiers out of the Air Force Base, and oil is in the neighborhood of $100 a barrel, you know, depending on the day of the week. So it's like, you know, bin Laden won. Bin Laden got what he wanted. And we certainly didn't. What we got was two wars on the national credit card, you know, a big mess. I'm just astounded by it. I'm just astounded by it. And I'm astounded by the fact that, you know, these wars are going to cost us in the neighborhood of $6-8 trillion, assuming that we were to end them now. When you consider, I mean, you know, World War II, we were still paying for World War II 35 years later as those retirees were entering the Veterans Administration hospitals, you know, in their old age and getting VA benefits. You know, it could be $10 trillion by the time we're done. And all of it was put on our national credit card. And to this day has been put. Well, actually, I think that when President Obama entered his first budget, that it actually put the war back off the national credit card and on the, which is of course why there's such a huge budget deficit. Bush pretended it didn't exist. Oh, there's no budget deficit. We'll deal with that with a special resolution. So it's like, you know, just the whole thing seems insane to me. William, thanks a lot for the call, and then thanks for listening to us down there in Baton Rouge. We'll be back. We got a whole bunch of folks on the line. Joe in Springfield, Utah, Jim in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Cherry down in Texas, Jim in Chicago, and it's filling up here. Tom, our telephone number, 866-987-THOM. 866-987-TOM.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be back with more of your calls live from Washington, D.C. today on 9/11, right after this.
Have you forgotten how it felt that day? See your homeland under fire and her people blown away. Have you forgotten?
Welcome back. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Did you play a clip, Jacob? Didn't get to it? Okay. Let's just play. We got a whole pile of clips here that Jacob's pulled together. Let's just play a quick clip, then we'll back to your calls. Maybe not.
So I don't know where he is. Nor do, you know, I just don't spend that much time on him, Kelly, to be honest with you. I repeat what I said. I truly am not that concerned about him.
That's why it took President Obama to find and kill bin Laden. Cherry in Texas. Hey, Cherry, what's up?
Hi. Just kind of concerned why you're leading up to, okay, you're talking about how when George Bush took over in 2000, that he was
2001, actually.
Bin Laden. And that Clinton and his people had all told them all about it and everything and warned them. If Clinton knew about it, why didn't Clinton do anything?
He did. On several occasions, he tried to kill bin Laden. Probably the most famous one was during the Monica Lewinsky prosecution when he fired three Scud missiles into Iraq and missed bin Laden by 30 minutes. And the Republicans rushed to the floor of the House and Senate and said he was trying to do it to divert their attention away from this important constitutional crisis of impeaching a president over a blowjob. And the Republicans made it very clear that if he was going to try and do any further military action to take out Osama bin Laden, he was going to have to get constitutional congressional authority. They wanted to have hearings about it. They shut him down. Although the CIA and the NSA were continuing to follow this. And, in fact, I would suggest that you go over to historycommons.org. This is not any kind of conspiracy website. It's a good wiki. And it's got all these complete timelines. The Center for Grassroots Oversight, historycommons.org. And there's a whole series of timelines of 9/11. And one of them is the timeline of the warnings about bin Laden. And, of course, they go back to the mid-90s. Another is the timeline of Bill Clinton's involvement with bin Laden and his attempts to get him. Another is the timeline of George Bush's. One of the members of Bush's cabinet, I'm forgetting his name now, the guy who was his Secretary of Commerce, Paul somebody or other. Anyhow, he wrote a book after he left office. And in that book, he said that in the very first cabinet meeting, In January of 2001, just months, a week after George W. Bush was sworn in, the very first cabinet meeting, the very first topic that came up. Now, keep in mind, this was 9 months before 9/11. First topic that came up was, how are we going to invade Iraq? And he was just flabbergasted by this. And invade Iraq. And the consensus eventually was, well, we don't yet have the support of the American people. We're going to have to figure out a way to get to that. And Dick Cheney was given two jobs by George W. Bush at that cabinet meeting. One was to be in charge of the Energy Task Force, and the other was to be, because the United States had not had an energy policy, an official energy policy, since Ronald Reagan ended Jimmy Carter's energy policy, took the solar panels off the White House roof, changed the speed limits, and did away with the oil excise tax and limits on imported oil. So we had no national energy policy. So Bush charged Cheney with creating one, number one, and number two, running the counterterrorism task force. And that, so Cheney immediately started meeting with the big oil industry people, and his meetings were closed. He never invited anybody other than the oil industry people in. There was nobody from the solar panel industry or the wind industry or anything else. They were explicitly excluded. And we know from judicialwatch.org, which is a conservative website, a conservative organization, that is, this is the organization that did the lawsuit that led to Monica Lewinsky. They did the original Jennifer Flowers lawsuit. Okay, so this is an organization that had a long history of suing the White House. They sued the Bush administration to get the records of Cheney's meetings in March of 2001. Now, keep in mind, this is 6 months before 9/11. And the documents are there. You can see them. They're on the net, they're on the web. They're on their at judicialwatch.org. They're on their website, among other places all over the internet. And what they were doing in those meetings, they were carving up the oil fields of Iraq and deciding which companies they were going to sell Saddam Hussein's oil to. Dick Cheney's counterterrorism task force never met until the first week of September. So how could I not say this happened on Bush's watch because he was looking the other way?
Okay, but at the same time, you also said that Clinton knew, and then he had chances to get a hold of him.
And tried.
And
okay, tried aggressively.
Because the only thing that was going on with Clinton's last days, from the time the coal was bombed till the end of his time there, was trying to cover up the fact whether he had sex or he didn't have sex. Did he do it in the Oval Office?
Oh, that's the only thing that the Republicans were talking about. That's not the only thing that was going on. Go, read Richard Clark's book.
That was all.
Read
that was
the actual
news.
Cherry.
All they ever seemed to be.
Yeah, that's all that ever made it to the news. But the fact of the matter is that the National Security Advisor's Office was Sandy Berger's office, and you know, Richard Clark talks about running around with his hair on fire. They were aggressively trying to find out where bin Laden was and take him out. And during the Clinton administration, and that all stopped when George Bush came into office, which is why Richard Clark resigned his office publicly. And still, Bush wouldn't go after bin Laden. So, Cherry, I suggest that you go back and check the histories. So anyway, Joe in Springfield, Utah. Hey, Joe, what's up?
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
Great.
This is the same old, as far as I'm concerned. I'm a Vietnam vet. I served from 68 to 72. And, we had a national security issue that caused us to kill 5 million people with weapons of mass destruction and I was part of that war machine. And it's just left my life screwed up ever since because of it. And now it's the same thing. And I don't care, you know. The bottom line, I the only solution that I see to solving this, the only way we're going to solve this is we've got to get on a page. And the page we've never been on is the Constitution. You know, I think you and everybody I am, I've formed a cooperative and we're going to try and start a tour. I hand out constitutions, but the bottom line is, if we want to change the policies, we've got to change the policymakers. If we want to change the policymakers, we've got to change where people's heads are at right now. And right now, it's making it up as we go.
Yeah.
The Constitution, I've been doing this like out here. I'm a trucker, and I've been doing this at the truck stops. And I just had a big go around with a guy while I was washing laundry this morning. You know, the unconsciousness of America. But the Constitution really grounds us. And I tell you what. I win only in the sense that I'm not trying to win an ideological thing, but I win my case whenever I talk with people and it's about the Constitution. And I find that for the most part, I'd say 75% of the people I talk to don't even know the first three words.
Right. Now, here's probably we the people. Yeah. Here's probably the most important part, apropos of today being 9/11 and are doing this live show. And I agree with you, Joe, that the Constitution is very important. And here's the part that is so critical that has to do with 9/11. And this is what Eisenhower was trying to tell us about in 1961 when he left office. If you go to Article 1 of the Constitution, which is the powers of Congress, and go to Section 8, where they enumerate the powers, and go to paragraph number 12, this was the result of a long debate, because they wanted to make sure that these guys had seen the history of Europe. They all very familiar with the history of Europe and the history of the Roman Empire, and that perpetual war brought down the Roman Empire. And that in Europe, you would have two kings or two countries that would be at war with each other for sometimes 40, 50, 60. There was a 100-year war, you know, in Europe. And, you know, multi-generational. And it was really only to keep the powerful in power and to keep the serfs as serfs and to keep them distracted. And so they wanted to make sure that we were never a nation of perpetual war. So here's paragraph 12 of Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution. One of the powers of Congress is to raise and support armies, but no appropriation of money to that use shall be for a longer term than 2 years. Now, nowhere else in the Constitution do they say that you can only spend money for 2 years. You could create Social Security and spend money forever. You can build colleges or schools, whatever, forever. The only thing that's limited to 2 years is the military budget. And that was very intentional, and every American should know that. Joe, thanks a lot for the call, and good on you for what you're doing. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
We're live. It's 9-11 in Washington, D.C. We'll be back with your calls.
I really don't remember, Commissioner, whether I discussed this with the president.
And I ask you whether you recall the title of that PDB.
I believe the title was Bin Laden Determined to Attack Inside the United States.
Welcome back. Live from Washington, D.C. on 9-11. Tom Hartman here with you. Sirens going by outside. It happens a lot. It's been happening a lot today, actually. We're taking your calls, 866-987-THOM. And, you know, I have my opinions, I guess. Maybe I'm more opinionated than I thought I was. But in any case, Tom Tom in Waterloo, Iowa. Tom, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. What really concerns me is the mentality following 9-11. Now, shortly after 9-11, I saw, you know, this up-and-coming war, which we're still fighting right now, and I wrote an article called Tom's Recipe for Peace on Earth. Well, one of the points I tried to make is that when you sell arms to every Tom, Dick, and Harry around the world who decides to go to war with another, sooner or later someone's going to get upset and come after you. Now, what got me was the response from that article. I mean, actually, they referred to it as a bunch of fish wrap, and they went back to the devolution style of handling things, which is to not worry about why you got hit, but just concentrate on going after the people. But yeah. The thing is that the article was written, oh, I don't know, about a good week after it was already attacked, and it's safe to say by then the airplanes were not in the air. And this is something that every time we start to try to rationalize on the issue, they show a picture of the burning towers and act like it happened just a few minutes ago.
Yeah, yeah. And really what we're seeing is the culmination of, I mean, you know, I was going to say 100 years of American foreign policy, or nearly, actually, it would be about 80 years. I mean, going back to America's in the 1930s, I think it was, that Roosevelt first to cut the deal with Saudi's, the original King Saud, and then he brought in the Wahhabists, Mr. Wahhab or whatever his name was. But really, it even goes back beyond that. I mean, when Polk was president in the 1830s, as I recall, and we went to war against Mexico to get what we now call Southern California, New Mexico, and Arizona, Abraham Lincoln went off on him about how America should not be doing adventures in foreign countries and should not be trying to steal land from other countries. So it's not like, you know, we've never been here before in this conversation. Tom, thank you for the call. Well said. Remarkable. Margie in Wisconsin. Hey, Margie. What's up?
Hi. I would just like to take a moment for those who died.
Margie, I'm sorry. I'm going to have to ask you to call back on with another phone because yours is breaking up so badly we cannot hear what you're saying. Try a different phone, please. Rick in Chicago. Hey, Rick, what's up?
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
Good. What's on your mind?
I was just wondering if you ever heard of a group called Aaron that worked at covert operations in the CIA?
No.
Aaron was set up as a covert operational group to track Osama bin Laden's every move, and I have personal knowledge of this, and it was up and running until George Bush took office, and he took away all of our financing and shut the doors just weeks before 9/11.
Wow. Okay. I mean, that's not inconsistent with the things that Richard Clark and others who were there have written. So, I can't speak beyond that about it. But, Rick, you want to recommend a book or a website or something?
I would just go to Freedom of Information Act and look it up. It's plain as day.
How do you spell it? Is it E-R-I-N or?
Aaron, A-A-R-O-N.
A-A-R-O-N. Okay, great. So if you Google that, A-A-R-O-N and 9/11 and Bin Laden or something like that, you probably find it. Rick, thank you very much. Gary in Michigan. Hey, Gary, what's up?
Yeah, well, I'd like to express my appreciation for all that you do and when Senator Sanders is on. But
thank you.
You know, my concern is that we spend so much time, obviously, on this great tragedy, but we have 40,000 people dying every year for lack of health insurance, and we barely hear a whimper in the media about this sometimes. So.
More people in the United States die from lightning strikes than from terrorism. More people in the United States die from dog bites than from terrorism. And as you accurately point out, although let me take a step further beyond what you just said, an estimated 10,000 people a year in the United States die for lack of health insurance. So far more people die in the United States, even in the year of 2001, died in the United States from lack of health insurance than died from terrorism. And so you have to ask the question. I mean, we can't do much about the lightning, and we're a nation that, you know, we love our dogs. But the healthcare thing, those 10,000 people a year who would die from the healthcare, who are the real terrorists? Are they the people who are denying those people that healthcare? I think an excellent point, Gary. Thank you for calling and making it. Mark in Orlando, Florida. Hey, Mark, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, just wanted to talk more about that project for the New American Century. You got a lot of players that were signing that are still key players in what's going now and are going on now in media, like Frank Gaffney with this anti-Muslim.
Yeah, but Gaffney's been totally marginalized. He's out there. He's basically on Fox News and the far right, hard right shows, but nobody takes Frank Gaffney seriously anymore.
Well, that's good, but I mean, these are the people that signed this this plan, and there was you had a guy on about, I don't know, about a week ago, and my phone service was down, and I couldn't call in, and you were like looking for, I wanted to give you that word because the person you had on there was like fighting it. Oh, there was no, like, here's the plan that something, if you look at like the Bay of Tonkin and all these other events, they outlined this plan even before 9/11. So it's like, and then you have these weird...
The plan for the invasion of Iraq we're talking about.
Right wing, you know, signing off on this thing from Jeb Bush to whatever.
Yeah, the Project for New American Century, PNAC.
We need to keep digging here. I just think that, you know, we're being, the wool's being pulled over our eyes on this one.
Yeah. Yeah, I am not at all in disagreement with you, Mark. I'm with you. Dorothy in Raymond, Washington. Hey, Dorothy, what's up?
Hi. Well, I had... information about what a researcher Carl Osman had told Victor Thorne on July 22nd about the people that were jumping out of the tower, which was very interesting. He said that one of the most gruesome aspects of the 9/11 were the reporters reporting dozens of people, you know, inside the Twin Towers, leaping hundreds of feet, landing on the streets of New York or the rooftops. So such dramatic measures just go against human nature because nearly all of us will cling to safety rather than plunge to certain death.
Well, and apparently many, you know, many of those people were either on fire or very close to it, or some of them.
And a lot of them had taken their clothes off. So the heat must have been extreme.
Right. Or their clothes were on fire.
Actually, they didn't. When they fell, they were like expunged out. They didn't fall directly to the ground. They were like they were thrown.
Well, so, you know, Chris Hedges wrote a piece about this. You can read it over at truthdig.org, I think it is. Maybe it's .com. And it's all around the web, probably over at Common Dreams and other places. He was a reporter, and he grabbed his New York Times credentials and went down to 9/11 as the first building was on fire. And he said the most horrific thing was the sound of the thuds as the bodies hit the ground, the people jumping out of the windows. And he talked about how the New York Times ran a picture of it and then pulled the picture back, and how the TV networks had all this footage of it and they refused to air it. It's like, you know, there's a limit of how gruesome America is allowed to we allow ourselves to see things. Dorothy, thank you for the call. With the exception of course, if you're watching CSI Miami or New York or something, you know, then it's like, oh, gruesome here. Let's have some gruesome. Anyhow, we are live. It's 9/11. We're taking your calls. Ronnie in Dallas. Hey, Ronnie, what's up?
Hey, it's Barney. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to recount what happened on the 12th.
Okay.
I went to work on Monday morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked up over the Dell complex in Austin, Texas, and low on the eastern horizon was the exaggerated waning crescent moon, conjunctive with the morning star, which is exactly what you see on the Pakistani flag.
Boy, that's strange.
Now, moon phases are 3 days long, so I went and looked it up, and the exact same thing happened this was, I guess, Tuesday. The exact same thing happened the prior day on the 10th.
Mm-hmm.
And so I speculate that they were using that as a key to, as a launch code, since they didn't have communications, you know.
Well, that's interesting. I don't have a clue about that, but that's fascinating. Ronnie, thank you for sharing your story with us. Great to hear from you. Sam in Point Pleasant, West Virginia. Hey, Sam, what's up?
Hey, man, just want you to know I'm with you, brother. You're one of the best special reporters, investigative reporters I've ever seen. And, you know, there's a lot of factors going on with this 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whole story ain't out there.
Mm-hmm.
Too many holes to be punched in this yet, you know,
yeah.
Journalism goes. But, you know, getting back to Middle East relations with the United States and how Britain's British Empire, United Kingdom, always had relations with them. We're always seem like we're messing with them some way. And Mark Twain, wasn't he the one that went and wrote a book? I can't remember who sent him, if you know that information.
Wrote a book what? About what? I'm sorry, I missed that, Sam. You said Mark Twain wrote a book. Sam, you still there? Oh, apparently not. Okay. Sam, sorry. I couldn't make sense out of that. Morris in Oklahoma. Hey, Morris, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, thanks for taking my call. My wife's been telling me something about the National Apostolic Revolution, I think NAR. I wanted to get your take on how serious this organization is, how widespread it is.
It's
not a threat at all to
excuse me. I'm not familiar with that specific group, but I know that there are a large number of right-wing groups, you know, associated with the militia movement and with fundamentalist Christianity. Tim McVeigh was probably the ultimate manifestation of that kind of thinking. And, you know, I find it interesting that, you know, on the anniversary of Oklahoma City, you know, we're not building a shrine there because we didn't have a president who decided to turn Oklahoma City into an opportunity to get himself reelected or to privatize Social Security or to become a war president. But instead, he found the criminal and executed him. It's useful to remember that Afghanistan offered to turn bin Laden over to us after 9/11, and Bush said no.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
It is 4:46 Eastern Time. We are live. It is 9/11. We're taking your calls here on the Tom Hartman Program.
I'm often asked why we're in Iraq when Saddam Hussein was not responsible for the 9/11 attacks. The answer is that the regime of Saddam Hussein was a clear threat.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, just really quickly, my take on this. We're live on 9/11 here on Sirius XM and Free Speech TV on Dish, and Direct, Dish Network and Direct TV. And live 9/11. Today is 9/11, live from Washington, D.C. I see three things that have come out of 9/11, and none of them were necessary. One is the rise of the national security state. We have turned into a fearful nation. We started using the word homeland after 9/11. This is the word that Adolf Hitler used to use, Heimat. This is not the homeland. Homeland is for countries that believe that your genetics determine your ancestry. That was the great. That's what makes America exceptional, is that we're the nation, the great melting pot. Okay. So anyhow, number one, the rise of the American security state. Number two, Islamophobia. It is now a $42 million a year industry. People like Pam Geller and others, Frank Gaffney, they actually make a living spreading fear of Muslims, as has been laid out and documented by the Center for American Progress over at thinkprogress.org. And number three, we've got two wars. We're fetishizing 9/11. You're more likely to die from lightning than from a terrorism strike. So anyhow, 866-987-THOM, 866-75, if all those lines are busy, which they are right now, 866-745-2667, another five lines. And let's pick up your calls, get your thoughts on this. Robert in Independence, Missouri. Robert, you're on the air.
Can you hear me, Tom?
I hear you just fine, Robert.
How are you doing?
I am great, thank you, and I hope you are well.
I'm very well, just right down the road from Truman Library.
Oh, my. Great place.
Yeah, great place. Listen, I was just wanting your thoughts on something, and maybe you can take this forward. Watch you every day, by the way. Anyway, do you think that there is an under, seems to be all reporting is really systematic reporting. It's like people rushing after the fire after it started or to diagnose a patient after, you know, they're already sick. What would it take for
Robert,
basically,
your phone is breaking up really badly.
I'm sorry. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. I was going to ask, do you think that there is a way to change our reporting and to look at, frankly, at the harsher issues? Because even with free speech and all that, all stuff is symptomatic, it seems to me.
Yeah. I think that the big problem that we have in the United States with regard to our media, apropos, you know, what you're saying, and thank you, Robert, for the call, is that Ronald Reagan did away with stopped enforcing the Fairness Doctrine in 1987. It was actually done away with last month. And then Bill Clinton signed the Telecommunications Act in 96 that allowed for giant radio and television monopolies. And the consequence of both of these things is that news divisions no longer had to provide real news. Radio and television stations no longer had to carry news as a condition of getting a license. And so we ended news and started with infotainment. And that's a whole other rant. But I want to stay on 9/11 here. Henry in Texas. Hey, Henry, what's up?
How you doing today, Tom?
I am great, but I'll get better, Henry. I hope the same is true for you.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, have you on a Sunday is kind of a sweet surprise, Look here, the main thing on my mind today, you know, with 9/11 and stuff, you know, I do feel for those families who lost loved ones.
Yes.
Feel sorry for the military personnel, families who lost members during the war for something that was, you know, probably wasn't necessary, probably could have went another route to get them. Bin Laden and other people, but you know the bottom line that gets me is this: is how fast us as Americans keep forgetting why all these things came to a head. And you know, and you said it right the first time. You know, as countries, we all are different. We all have our own culture. We all have our own way of doing things. And yes, we want every culture to come to modern times, to come up with new technologies and all these things, and be responsible for those things. But you know, when you put yourself out there to want to undermine a foreign government or whatever the case might be, you got to expect consequences of it.
Sure.
And there's always going to be people who are going to rebel against you.
Yeah.
You know, and the thing is, there's ways of doing things, but I just think, you know, what the problem is, we just have bad communications. For years, we let groups keep building up by not trying to, you know, sit down and figure their argument point.
Yeah.
You know?
I'll tell you, you know, Jimmy Carter famously said in 1978 that by the year 2000, he had put into place a policy that by the year 2000, 20%, I believe it was, might have been 30%, I'm pretty sure it was 20% of America's energy would come from a solar bank, and that we would never again import more oil. And thank you for the call, Henry. You said it very well. We would never again import more oil. Are you finding that clip there, Jacob? Is that what you're doing? You got it? Here it is. Listen to this.
The energy crisis is real. It is worldwide. It is a clear and present danger to our nation. These are facts, and we simply must face them. What I have to say to you now about energy is simple and vitally important. Point one, I am tonight setting a clear goal for the energy policy of the United States. Beginning this moment, this nation will never use more foreign oil than we did in 1977. Never.
And then he continues to talk.
Moreover, I will soon submit legislation to Congress calling for the creation of this nation's first solar bank, which will help us achieve the crucial goal of 20% of our energy coming from solar power by the year 2000.
Now, that was the last time we had an energy policy in the United States, and I would say that had Ronald Reagan not been elected, but instead had Jimmy Carter gotten another term and he had maintained those policies, we would have bought far less oil, maybe none at all from Saudi Arabia. And Osama bin Laden never would have happened, and 9/11 never would have happened. Mark in Alabama. Mark, what's on your mind?
Yeah, Tom, do you think that we would be better off if all the troops were brought home?
Yes.
You know, from Iraq and Afghanistan?
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, yeah, I mean, it's just...
And if we're going to have a presence in those countries, we should replace the troops with teachers and doctors and if necessary, engineers. But I think that those countries both have, you know, competent, you know, a competent engineering class. They've built those countries before. They can do it again. They may need some financial help from us. But it's a pittance. I mean, the GDP, the gross domestic product of Afghanistan before we started bombing them was $2 billion a year. We're spending $2 billion a week now on this war. I mean, we could give them an entire year's worth of their economy and said, here, double your country. It's just insane, you know, what we're doing. And you know, instead we're going to spend trillion. A trillion is 1,000 billion. And the GDP of all of Afghanistan was $2 billion. The GDP of all of Iraq was like 16, 18, 20, something like that. I don't remember the exact number, but it was fairly low. I mean, we are spending, but, you know, all that money that we're spending is ending up paying for these, you know, 35 bedroom luxury mansions all around in the belt or around Washington D.C. here. This is Mark. Thank you for the call. Sarah Palin, of all people, pointed this out last week. The seven of the richest counties in America are right around Washington D.C. The defense contractors.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you live on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio and on Free Speech TV on Dish Network and Direct TV. And very pleased to be with you live here on 9/11 from Washington, D.C. for the special program. Your thoughts on 9/11, from remembrances of the day or of the people to, you know, what you think brought it about or what we should do about it. It's I'll share my opinions, but this is a chance to hear yours. Karen in Ulster, Pennsylvania. You are on the air, Karen. Karen?
Karen.
There we go.
I'm right here.
Yep, gotcha.
Here I am.
Okay, what's up?
Well, first I want to tell you how very much I appreciate you. But
thank
my
you.
Question for today is, we spend so much time rehashing and in this grief for 9/11, but we're not paying any attention to our soldiers and sailors. And I had two grandsons, one in the Navy, one in the Army, that served over there for a long time. We are not giving them any due, enough due. We don't even know when one is killed unless it's a local boy and it makes our local news.
Yes.
So many are coming back in such terrible, wretched shape.
Yes.
And I asked my grandson, who was in the Navy, and if Bethesda was as bad as Walter Reed when they were having the cockroaches and the mice and everything. Okay. And he said he had just been to visit a friend there, and he said, Grandma, it's just as bad.
Yeah.
And, you know, I lived through Vietnam. Now we're doing over and over. It's like we never learn anything.
Yep.
And I guess that's all I have to say.
Well, Karen, apropos of that, let me just make a quick observation, if I may. My father tried to serve in World War II. When he was 17 years old, mm-hmm. graduated from high school, he volunteered. It turned out by the time he was done with basic training, about a week before he finished basic training, the Nagasaki bomb went off and the war completely ended. And so he spent his two years of enlistment in Japan as part of the occupation. So he was not in the war, but he was in that cohort of men and women who, if they served in the military, were eligible for the GI Bill. And because of the GI Bill, my dad came back to the United States after the war, back from Japan, and went to college for 2 years. He ended up dropping out because my mom got pregnant with me. But his goal was to get his PhD and be a history professor. He was able to go to college. It was paid for by the government. He got a stipend. He got a housing allowance. Ultimately he bought a house because of the GI Bill. I mean, you know, with funding, not funding, but government guarantees. We provided for our veterans after World War II. and we're not providing for our veterans now. We need another GI Bill. We need to say anybody who comes back from these horrible wars, your college is free all the way to a PhD, and we'll give you a stipend to make sure that you don't have to work in a gas station part time to do it, so that you can actually study, and that you can get some housing. I mean, we need to the GI Bill. You know, the Republicans all screamed it was socialism, but you know they couldn't stop it. You know, Harry Truman pushed that thing through. And it's and we need another one. Karen, thank you for your call, and thank you for remembering the soldiers. You're absolutely right. Mike in Charlotte, North Carolina. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I actually called you when I heard your comment about a $46 million industry about spreading hate of Islam.
Yeah, and $42 million actually is the number that's been quantified.
I gotta totally disagree with that number. That's got to be grossly understated, because it's got to be so much higher.
It may well be. Those are the amounts that these right-wing foundations actually report to the Internal Revenue Service as having given to people like Pam Geller and Frank Gaffney and you know the whole crowd. The report is public. The math was done. The investigative reporting was done by the Center for American Progress. AmericanProgress.org is their website. You can find it,
right,
and you can look at it. But $42 million is a hell of a lot of money.
That's a ton of money. And my second comment is, you know, we 9/11 has been discussed amongst me and my friends, and I feel like so many people have been rubbing their hands together just waiting for this day so they can use the emotion surrounding 9/11 to spread to further their own memes and agendas, as far as more wars, anti-Islam and Muslim, and anti-diversity, and whatever it may be. But
yeah,
you know that these politicians, the Republicans and right wingers and whoever, definitely they're going to tug on people's heartstrings about the further their own means.
Yeah, and absolutely. My take on this, and it was my daily take on our TV show last Friday. Either Thursday or Friday, was that the three lasting legacies of 9/11 are the rise of the American national security state, Islamophobia, you know, Muslims as the new acceptable group to bash, and two wars that are still ongoing and that we put on our national credit card that are going to end up probably costing us $6 trillion at least. Mike, thank you for the call. Very, very well said. Mike, from Mike to Mike. Mike in Syracuse, New York. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Well, how are you, Bob?
Hey, what's up, Mike?
I like this. Can you hear me?
Barely. You sound pretty muffled.
Is that better?
That's better, yeah. So what's up?
What I was going to say, Tom, was I want to address this to all the audience also, and that is the difference between Islamic phobia and Islam. I think, you know, I'm personally getting sick and tired of people associating the two. You know, these people that ran a jet through a building were terrorists.
Yeah. In other words, what you're getting tired of is the association of the conflation of Islamic terrorism and Islam.
Exactly.
Yeah, I agree with you. Just like we don't, you know, we don't every day, whenever we talk about Christians, also bring up, you know, Tim McVeigh or the people who killed, you know, the guy who killed George Tiller, or, you know, the guy who bombed down and bombed the Olympics down in Atlanta. Even though they were Christians, and you know, and not so much of McVeigh, but the others, you know, in the name of Christ, we're doing this. We don't do that, and we shouldn't be doing it with Muslims.
Absolutely right. And I just want to, if any Republicans or right wing people are listening, I just want to emphasize that fact that these are terrorists. As a matter of fact, if you remember the bombing and the building in Africa, I believe it was Kenya, and in 9/11, there were Muslims in those buildings, and they'll kill Muslims also.
Oh, they've killed far more Muslims than they have us.
Exactly.
Yeah. So very well said, Mike. Thank you very much for the call. A good thought. Mark in Tucson, Arizona or Arkansas? It's got to be Arizona.
Arizona.
Right?
How you doing,
yeah,
Tom?
Easy. Yeah, I'm fine. How are you, Mark?
Oh, I'm doing all right.
What's up?
Years after the biggest lie in our country's history, eh?
You think so? You know, the Gulf of Tonkin was a lie. And that got us into Vietnam. The USS Maine blowing up was a lie. It got us into the Spanish-American War.
You got it.
I mean,
you got it. The Lusitania was a lie. It got us into World War One. And the jury's not so far out on Pearl Harbor either. So
yeah, well,
it seems like
Yeah.
It's a long line of events that are pretty much primed to take care of the industrialists in this country and put all of the rest of us into the army so we can be their pawns.
You know, Mark, I don't disagree with you broadly speaking. I would suggest that the causal relationship is probably reversed, though, that that it's not so much that they sit around and say, okay, let's have a war so that we can make some money. It's that when something happens that looks like an opportunity, they hype it and pump it and turn it into a war so they can make some money. And,
oh,
you know,
yeah, I'm sure they don't miss any opportunity to make the money, whether they formulate it or whether they just take advantage of something that...
I mean, this is Naomi Klein called it disaster capitalism, right?
You got it. You got it. Hey, I just wanted to out for you and your crew. There's a fairly large contingency in this country that are actually actively seeking an independent investigation of what happened to the buildings on 9/11, hoping that it will lead to some conclusions.
Yep.
And if anybody wants to take it down, the lead group really is a group of architects and engineers.
Yeah, I thought it was engineers and architects is the order, isn't it, if you Google it or if for the website?
It's architects and engineers.
Okay.
For
A&E. Okay.
11truth.org.
Okay, architects A&E and engineers.
11truth.org is
okay.
The website.
Yeah, I'm familiar with the group.
These guys have been working actively. Richard Gage is the fellow that actually put it all together. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to hear him as a guest on your show sometime.
Okay. Well, thank you for the suggestion, Mark, and you know, for mentioning the website. There are so many questions. You know, you've got the architects and engineers going, what happened on that day? You got people like me saying, you know, what happened over the last, you know, over the 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 years leading up to that? I think, you know, historians will be looking at what happened in the 50 years leading up to that? How did our relationship with Saudi Arabia lead to this?
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We're live on 9/11 from Washington, D.C. Tom Hartman here with you. 16 minutes past the hour, 5 o'clock Eastern Time.
Well, there's no doubt that we are safer now than we were 10 years ago. And that's thanks to the incredible work that's been done by intelligence, by our military, by the sacrifice of the 9/11 generation that's served in Afghanistan and Iraq. So as a consequence of both more effective homeland security as well as taking the fight to Al-Qaeda, we are in a much stronger position now than we were then. And Al-Qaeda's on the path to defeat.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you live from Washington, D.C. on 9/11. And it is 5:20 in the afternoon Eastern Time. We'll be here until 7 o'clock Eastern Time. And Tom in California, where it's not Eastern time, it must be 2:20 there. Hey, Tom, what's up?
Hey, Tom, this is Tom from who's helped promote your show. You probably remember me with Gay Yellow Pages.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I just wanted to make a really, really quick point that I heard this morning.
Yeah.
If we took 15 million people that are unemployed right now and we gave them $40,000 each per year, that would be $600 billion. And we could put those people to work instead of fighting these wars.
Right. And that's 10% of the cost of these two wars over the next 20 years.
Absolutely. It's astounding. And then I did hear something today from Jimmy Williams on from the Dylan Radigan show.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote on Twitter, 10 years pass, and we reflect, I'm left with one thing. The men who flew those planes were taught to hate.
Yeah.
We are better than that. No more hate.
Yes.
I thought it was so apropos in terms of, you know, everything that goes on in this country in terms of the hate that's out there.
Yes, that is so, you know, well said, Tom. That is so well said. And just, you know, apropos of what you just brought up with the amounts, I mean, I'm saying $6 trillion. So far, it looks like we've spent, over the last 10 years, at least $1.2 trillion and by some estimates $3 trillion. The Center for American Progress did the math on this and figured out how much, you know, what we could have bought with that money that George Bush put on the national credit card. We could have provided 63 million scholarships for university students every year for 10 years. We could have given 58.9 million low-income children health care every year for 10 years. We could have given 23 million Americans access to low-income health care every year for 10 years. We could have given 20 million students with Pell Grants worth $5,500 a year for 10 years. We could have provided 15 million Head Start slots for kids for 10 years, every year for 10 years. We could have provided the Veterans Administration with care for 14.7 million military veterans every year for 10 years and dramatically increased the quality and breadth of the service. We could have hired 2 million firefighters every year for 10 years. We could have hired 1.7 million elementary school teachers every year for 10 years and 1.73 million police officers every year for 10 years. We could have retrofitted 69 million households for wind power every year for 10 years, and we could have retrofitted 26 million households for solar power every year for 10 years. And instead, what we've got is some very, very wealthy war contractors building mansions in Virginia just down the road from me. So,
absolutely. And, yeah. like I said, I mean, we could take care of that unemployment problem in about 2 seconds.
Yep, you're absolutely right, Tom. Tom, you're so right. And good on you for doing the gay yellow pages out there in California. Thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for listening to the program. Patricia in Lincoln City, Maryland. Hey, Patricia, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to draw attention to your author guest speaker on Friday night. And I can't remember his name. The gentleman with the birds.
He wrote the book about the killing the cranes.
Thank you.
Yeah,
so much.
I can't remember
that
his name either. But if you go to Conversations with, I'm sorry, go ahead.
That was the most comprehensive and sane account of what could be done and what could have been done instead of what we've done. It was just awesome, and I hope you keep talking about it. I think we should start something that would buy a book for every member of Congress and the Senate so they could read it, so they could begin to understand what we've done wrong. Just an aside, Tom, which drives you crazy. The only leasage in the new buildings of the towers are the Chinese, who we have spent the money to have the glass that went into the towers put in, and also the Germans who gave the steel. So again, here we go, shipping out to ship in instead of putting our people to work.
Amazing.
Amazing.
Yeah. It's like the Bay Bridge being made in China. Patricia, Edward. How do you say it again? Say it loud. Gervais. Edward Gervais was the author of Killing Cranes, and that video will be up at conversationswithgreatminds.com probably midday tomorrow from our Friday TV
wonderful.
Show. So, yeah,
if wonderful. You keep talking about it, Tom. The guy was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, he was. He really was. Patricia, thank you so much for the call. And thanks for your kind words and for participating. Henry in Ithaca, New York. Hey, Henry, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I think most people who are familiar with the situation, the war of terror, I call it, not the war on terror, but obviously a tragic waste of lives and resources, hundreds of billions, trillions of dollars, who knows how many hundreds of thousands of lives wasted. So the question that we need to ask, I think, is how do we put an end to this?
Mm-hmm.
And I think the most effective tool that we have is a thorough investigation into the 9/11 attacks, because everyone that I have spoken with that has studied this in depth, and that includes myself, it's very clear that this was a false flag event that was done with the aid and assistance of the U.S. government. One of the most obvious things is the demolition of the buildings. I don't know if you've ever watched a video of World Trade Center 7 coming down at 5:30 p.m.
I have, yeah.
9/11.
I've seen several of the DVDs and shows that are out there on the topic. Henry, I personally don't believe it was a false flag operation or it was done by our government, but I do believe that I can't say that equivocally, and I don't think anybody can on either side. We need a serious and I know that there are a bunch of them going on. Amateur is the wrong word. What would you call it? Civilians by civilians. But we need a real, genuine investigation into what the hell happened, what led up to it, what happened on that day, and what has happened since. And, you know, from the ignoring crimes of the Bush administration to actually, you know, all the way back to the 40s, to Franklin Roosevelt cutting a deal with the king of Saudi Arabia, you know, to the seeds of this thing, so that we can learn the lessons of how this all came about, and then the war crimes that followed it. We need to investigate all of it. So Henry, I personally disagree with you about the controlled demolition, but on the other hand, as I said, I can't say you're wrong. And
do you agree that World Trade Center 7 came down at a rate that is indistinguishable from free fall, which has now been documented?
I don't know, Henry. I don't represent myself as an expert on 9/11. I can tell you a lot about the Kennedy assassination, but when it comes to 9/11, I have a lot more questions than I do answers. But thank you for the call, and thank you for raising the issue. I know there are a lot of people who share your thinking on this, and I just want to say, you know, I respect it. I don't fully agree with it. You get the point anyway. Jim in Homefield, Pennsylvania, got a minute to the break. Jim, what's up?
Yes, kind of on the same subject, but a little bit of twist on it. Let me wind this back a little bit. Before 9/11, they had the neocons, as you know, wrote the New American Century. And in their words, they had to have a catastrophic solidifying event like a new Pearl Harbor to unite the people.
Yeah, that was their language, a new Pearl Harbor.
Well, that's pretty, you know, if somebody came up to me and they put that in my face, and all these think tanks and all these neocons, Pearl, Richards, Thorson, and people like that behind that said that to me, you know what? I would believe them. And this is in their writing.
Yep.
And that should be investigated. And the first time I heard that was through Joy Bear. That was on The View, of all places.
Yeah, no, Joy gets it. It raises a lot of, as I said in the last caller, Jim, there are a lot of questions here and not a lot of answers, and we need to find out the answers. Jim, thank you for the call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
We're live, Sirius XM Satellite Radio, Dish Network, DirecTV on Free Speech TV on 9/11. Back with your calls.
What did Iraq have to do with what?
The attack on the World Trade Center.
Nothing.
We've had no evidence that Saddam Hussein was involved with September the 11th.
He ignored it. He ignored terrorism for months when maybe we could have done something to stop 9/11. Maybe. We'll never know.
Yeah, amazing. In fact, it turns out when you go back and you look at the timeline that George W. Bush ignored even though he had been warned by Bill Clinton. He ignored Osama bin Laden and the whole thing until July of 2001, when he went to the G8 meeting in Genoa, Italy. And the hotel that he was supposed to stay in, it was publicized, and so it got called off. But al-Qaeda actually was intending to hijack a plane and fly it into the hotel building and kill all these world leaders. And Bush was told about this, and so he stayed on an aircraft carrier out in the Mediterranean. And when he got back from that, that's when he went to Condoleezza Rice and said, I'd like you to look into the possibility that maybe, you know, they're planning an attack here. And she's like, sir, we've got this whole, you know, Richard Clark running around with his hair on fire and all this kind of stuff going on, which led to the famous August 6th memo. Pretty amazing. Caller in Bear Creek, Pennsylvania. Hey, caller, what's up?
Oh, yes, I have a very, very important question about the NATO. When the NATO was established during the Cold War, the Russian had a counterpart and called it the Warsaw Treaty.
Right, the Warsaw Pact.
The Union went down the drain. NATO should have followed suit. What do you think?
It's a good question. I don't honestly know the answer to that. You know, the NATO alliance has now moved its focus from the Soviet Union and Russia to, at the moment, Afghanistan and Iraq and Libya most recently. I think really what it is, what NATO is, you know, we are the rulers of the world. You know, this group of countries, the new military elite, the new Roman Empire, if you will. And I don't think that they would have dissolved it for anything, you know, just like, you know, when Clinton, you know, after the end of the Cold War and Clinton raised taxes a little bit and cut back on military spending and suddenly we had a surplus and that surplus was not going to last. You know, you got some really greedy military contractors. So that's my take on that, caller.
But for us, we could save billions of dollars if we did not have the NATO, because Europe can easily defend itself.
Yes, I absolutely agree. I absolutely agree. Thank you very much for the call. Well said. Maureen in Arkansas. Hey, Maureen, welcome to the program on 9/11.
Thank you. I wanted to ask you or remind you, there was a book I read about 25 years ago written by a Greek guy named George Antononis. It was called The Arab Awakening. Mm-hmm. And I think if people read that book, which goes back to the World War One, when T.E. Lawrence was Lawrence of Arabia,
yep.
That movie has a lot of violence in it, but it also has a lot of political, what was going on behind Lawrence's back.
Yes.
And how he had lied to the people that he had talked into trusting him.
Yep.
It's very interesting. I don't know if the book is still in print or not. Somebody stole it from me years ago.
Okay.
I really like like your show. Thank you.
Thank you, Maureen. Thank you very much for sharing that with us. I appreciate it. Great to hear from you. Paul in San Jose, California. Our telephone number is 866-987-THOM, 866-745-2667. Louis says, say that more slowly. By the way, hang on just a second, Paul. I just want to shout out a special thank you to Bill over at SiriusXM, who is engineering in New York on that end. And here in Washington, D.C., Chris doing our video, Jacob running our board, who came in on his day off with his girlfriend Carmen is here from Portland. And Carmen is here with us. Louise is answering the phones. And to Travis in Denver, who is putting the TV signal up. Thank you to all of you. Anyhow, back to your phone calls. Whoops, hang on just a second, Mary. I had Paul on before, didn't I? So we'll go to Paul first in San Jose. Hey, Paul, what's up? Paul, you are on the air.
Okay. I was watching Michael Moore on Democracy Now, and he said that if we were to stop the Afghan-Iraqi war for one whole month, it would be enough, the United States would have enough money to supply the whole world with fresh water. Now, wouldn't you rather be from a country that's giving water instead of war?
Yes. Yes. We could also feed the world with the money that we've spent on the Iraq war and the Afghanistan war. We could also have given health care to all of our people. We could have also built schools. I mean, George Bush not just opened the gates of hell in Iraq with this war, but he has not only devastated our reputation around the world, but squandered an opportunity for America to become a greater and noble country. And instead, we've become a nation of paranoid, fearful, people who applaud when Rick Perry is announced as the guy who killed the most, more than any other governor in the United States. I mean, it's just horrific. Paul, thanks for the call. Mary in Southern California. Hey, Mary, what's up?
Hey, Tom.
Hi.
Salutes to you. Look, that day, I woke up and I was watching my beloved husband, now deceased, getting dressed to go out for the day to take a flight ride to somewhere, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
The words that came in, I had three very distinct words, and I do not pretend to be a psychic. Three words came to me. Perfection, double cross, and Mossad. I have no, and that was way before anybody made any connection to the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that's about, but the only thing we come down to is cui bono. Who benefits from all this crap?
Yeah, I don't think Israel has benefited from this. I think that who has benefited from it is Halliburton, which was nearly bankrupt. You know, Dick Cheney, as CEO of Halliburton, had acquired Dresser Industries, which had this huge asbestos liability. My dad was one of the people who was suing them for killing him. And it was a horrible business decision. And that company was literally on the edge of bankruptcy when he became vice president and took hundreds of thousands of stock options with him. And, Blackwater was a shooting range in Eric Prince's backyard for all practical purposes. He was, part of the DeVos family, the Amway empire in Michigan. But Blackwater was nothing. You had a bunch of other smaller military contractors or larger military contractors, you know, Raytheon and Boeing and whatnot, that were, they were doing okay, but, you know, it wasn't great times. It wasn't the Vietnam War. And there were a whole bunch of people who right now are not just millionaires, and in some cases not just multimillionaires, but billionaires. Corporations, you know, Halliburton became so profitable that they spun off KBR, and then they, you know, frankly, I believe that they were so involved with so many war crimes that they moved their headquarters to the Middle East, to Abu Dhabi, or to Dubai, where they only have to, by law, keep their records for 1 year, and then they can destroy them, and they're no longer an American company even, and we're still hiring them to, you know, for operations in the Middle East. I mean, I it seems to me that the major benefactor, the people who benefited from this war, are U.S.-based corporations and people connected with the largely Republican establishment, although certainly there's a lot of Democrats as part of that, far more than any foreign power. But your point is made, Mary. Thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Joe in California. Hey, Joe, what's up?
Tom. I'm glad to hear your voice. People are begging at the gas stations whenever I go to the gas stations, and my heart goes out to them because there's no jobs here.
You mean they're begging for money?
From what I understand. Yeah. And the seasonal workers, you know, that come from Mexico, from what I understand, they're not sending money back to Mexico anymore because there's no money to send back.
In fact, they're going back to Mexico now.
Here.
They're literally going back to Mexico. There's a reverse immigration going on right now. Yeah. Yeah, so you're right.
My heart goes out to them. We're all Americans, and it's horrible.
Yeah.
That's all I can say.
Okay. Well, what point made, Joe, and an excellent point. And so much could have been done with that money instead of these two insane wars as a result of 9/11. Mike in Chicago. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hey, Tom. There was a piece earlier this week in the Navy Times. I haven't had a chance to read it all the way, but it looks like the banksters want to go after the military pensions now. They want to do a 401k deal.
I don't believe it. I mean, I do believe it. You read this in the Navy Times?
I believe it was in the Navy Times. Yes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like, you know, we have an, you know, the finance industry is now the largest one in America. It's, you know, it kind of 34% of corporate profits last year, and then they make absolutely nothing. They make nothing. I mean, they used right. to be like this boring little business, you know, with green eye shades and banker's hours and, you know, a nice predictable middle class salary, but that was it. And now they're the billionaires, and now they want to go after military pensions. Incredible. Mike, thanks for the heads up. I'll keep an eye on that one. John in Maryland. Hey, John, what's up?
Hey, how are you, sir?
Very well, thank you. What's on your mind today?
Well, I was thinking about an alternative to income tax so far as redistributing the wealth in this nation.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of taxing income, would it be better to put in like a personal property tax on rich people's assets? So if you own assets greater than $1 million, then you get taxed 50% on the value of your assets, because by taxing income, you're never, ever going to get hold of all of that wealth in this country.
Right. That's how they do it in the United Kingdom, and that's how much of Europe does it. In addition to an income tax, they also have what you and I might call a wealth tax. And, it works. So.
Yeah, I think that would be a much more palatable method of taxation to get some of the money away from these, you know, money-grabbing elitists.
Well, the effort to do that was started here in the United States by President Teddy Roosevelt, the Republican, and it was called the estate tax. And that was to stop multi-generational wealth. So at least you collect, you know, the Paris Hilton tax, basically. You collect that from the heirs when somebody dies. And thank you for the call, John. And I know with the estate tax that, you know, they hired Frank Luntz to focus group this thing, and he came up with this death tax thing. And this was paid for, this whole campaign was funded by the five heirs of the, or some of the heirs of the Walton family. But the estate tax is like, you know, something pretty important. And right now it's zero.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
5:46 Eastern Time on 9/11, live from Washington, D.C. Tom Hartman back with more of your calls in just a moment.
I believe that Muslims have the right to practice their religion as everyone else in this country. This is America, and our commitment to religious freedom must be unshakable. The principle that people of all faiths are welcome in this country and that they will not be treated differently by their government is essential to who we are. The writ of the founders must endure.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 10 minutes before the hour, 6 o'clock on the East Coast, 10 minutes before 3 on the West Coast. It is 9/11. We are live on a special program today for Sirius Satellite Radio, Sirius XM Radio, and that is simulcast by Free Speech TV on Dish Network and DirecTV. And Herman in L.A. Hey, Herman, what's up?
Hello, Tom. I'm glad to be able to get to you on today because I'm really tired of all these memorials, just tired of it. Why am I tired of it? Because it just kind of reminds me of people who call it, use the word Jesus and say Jesus is my favorite philosopher. I believe in Jesus. And people who pray for rain in July, like Governor Perry, prays for rain in July, and it's now September the 11th, and it hasn't rained since. And, I'm talking about George Walker Bush. We already went through this with him. He was warned about 9/11 about to happen. He ignored all the warnings again and again and again. And then he acts surprised. No, he doesn't even act surprised. He just sits there in the schoolroom.
Yeah.
For minutes while the buildings burn down and people jump out the buildings. That's why I'm sick and tired of this. He sat there while people were jumping alive down to their deaths and didn't do a thing. He didn't do a thing just to defend the country, and yet he sits there all proud, and he believes in Jesus. I'm sick and tired of people who say they believe in Jesus and bring us nothing but hell on earth and torture.
Yep. Herman, well said. Well said. Thank you very much for your call. Robert in Texas. Hey, Robert.
Yes. I wanted to mention that I'm a Army reservist, and I was activated for 2 years with the Army, and then I finished my time, and then I had 6 months of free health care. And during this 6 months, my wife was like 40 years old, and she was having bad headaches, and it turns out she had an aneurysm, and then she had surgery for it. And, I'm just thankful, I thank God that my wife had the surgery. And before all this health care with the military and TRICARE came up, there was nothing. So, I'm just thankful for that. But yet, what about the poor suckers that don't have health care, and yet the Republicans and the Tea Parties want to say these people don't deserve it, but yet my wife works, really hard every day and, works in a nursing home and sometimes overtime, and yet the working middle class and lower middle class don't deserve health care, and we are contributing to society. We are paying our taxes. We are being good, loyal citizens. And
we're the only developed country in the world that doesn't provide all of its citizens with free health care.
Right. And then I want to throw in a Rick Perry thing.
Okay. Since you're calling from Texas, you're right, Robert. Right.
Yeah, I can't remember how long ago I heard about this, but it was brought up on religious contributions from him in the past few years. And I hope one of my Tea Partiers or Republican associates can prove me wrong, but did he not give $10 in the year 2009, and now he's getting on the religious bandwagon? So please help us Tom Hartman viewers and listeners. Correct me if we're wrong.
I personally don't know. I haven't paid any attention to Dick Cheney's tax returns, but he is a man that I believe is a war criminal, a sociopath, and has been a horrible, horrible, horrible influence on this country since the 1970s when he first came into government, the late 60s, early 70s, when he was first elected to Congress and then ended up at the Secretary of Defense in the Ford administration. And then, Plan B and the Committee for the Present Danger and the stuff that him and Rumsfeld did in the 70s, right up to today. It's all been horrible. It's been horrible. Robert, thank you for the call. Thanks for your comments. Very well said. Dilly, also in Texas. Hey, Dilly, what's up?
Tom, you were discussing Cheney when he was with Halliburton.
Yes.
I have been in the photographic industry for about 50 years, and I handled all of the Russian satellite imagery that the oil companies were using to discover oil all over our planet.
Mm-hmm.
I personally delivered the image of Turkmenistan to Oryx Energy in Dallas. They were celebrating with champagne because I was told it was the biggest new oil strike on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it was less than a month later, Oryx Energy was bought out by Halliburton and Dick Cheney,
mm-hmm.
and the rest is history.
You're right, and the Turkmenistan is the T in the TAPI pipeline that we talked about Friday night. I mentioned the video. This will be up on conversationswithgreatminds.com sometime midday tomorrow. But we had a half-hour conversation with the author of Killing the Cranes, which is a fellow who spent 30 years in Afghanistan. And wrote about it.
I want to figure out how
Go ahead.
Hear that interview.
You just go to conversationswithgreatminds.com or tomhartman.com, and you'll be able to find it real easily. But it's the Turkmenistan, Afghanistan, Pakistan, India pipeline was going to carry oil from that new find that you delivered to that company.
Oh, I know all about it.
Okay, and that's why all of a sudden
I would love to have a private conversation with you.
Okay, well, I might, you know, you can contact me. There are ways to contact me are on the website. But what year was this? I'm just curious that the oil was discovered in Turkmenistan.
Well, it was before Perestroika. We were dealing with the Russian general.
This was the early to mid 80s then.
Yes.
Okay, great. Very, very interesting. Dilly, thank you very much.
We were getting the Soviet images that mm-hmm. they took from their satellites on a daily basis.
Yeah.
Navy admirals were getting them from the Soviet generals.
Okay.
And
Dilly,
I was there.
Dilly, I've got to move along. We just have a minute to the end of the show. Thank you very much. And Lonnie, that minute is yours. Lonnie in Missouri, what's up?
Yeah. Hi, Tom. I wanted to ask you if you ever read the book Economic Hitman.
Oh, yeah. Not only have I read John Perkins' book, John is a friend of mine. In fact, he wrote a blurb for my new book that's coming out. So, yeah, I'm real familiar with John Perkins' work, Confessions of an Economic Hitman. Yeah.
He was asked about 9/11 being an inside job,
mm-hmm.
and he said, just follow the money.
Yeah. Well, I would say the same thing. You know, whether or not it's an inside job, I don't know. But I would say with regard to 9/11, with regard to the Vietnam War, with regard to World War I, with regard to the Spanish-American War, the Mexican War, with regard to, Grenada. Follow the money, absolutely, all the time. It was the wise advice of Deep Throat. And, I think it's what you find all over the place. Thanks a lot for the call, Lonnie. Good to hear from you. We'll be back. We have another hour of the show. It's about 2 minutes before 6 o'clock Eastern time. We'll be on the air until 7, live here, special program for Sirius XM Radio, satellite radio, coast to coast, and also being simulcast by Free Speech TV on DirecTV and Dish Network TV. So stick around. We'll be taking more of your calls on 9/11, live on 9/11, right after this.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
6:06, live on the East Coast on 9/11. Here, Tom Hartman with you, a live special presentation program for Sirius XM Radio. It is simulcast by Free Speech TV. And our telephone number, 866-987-THOM, taking your calls. And Hayes in Astoria, Oregon. Hey, Hayes, what's up?
Well, I was just watching your show, which I always enjoy. And I wanted to tell you that I was in Europe and Ireland just before 9/11 happened, and I kept thinking about, after 9/11 happened, I kept thinking about Eisenhower's prophecy that if you have a war machine, you're going to want to use it.
Mm.
And immediately I was caught up, and people were telling me, you've got to stop Bush the bully. In fact, a German paper had the headline, Bush the bully will attack Iraq.
This was before 9/11?
No, the day after, about 2 days after.
Yeah, yeah.
They were just positive that we were going to use this as an excuse to get our war machine into action to make money for the people that make the bullets, the planes, the Halliburtons, et cetera.
Yeah.
And it came out to be true, and that so disappointed me.
Yeah, I'm absolutely with you, Hayes. Thank you very much for the call. Well said. Linda in Arkansas. Hey, Linda, what's up?
This is Linda. It's Arizona.
Oh, Arizona. Okay. Louise has to learn A-Z, not A-R. Okay.
No problem. Tom, I just love your show. Every time I get a chance, I watch it. But I was watching a documentary, and I just wanted to put in something there that might make dimension. The night before the attacks, George Bush was in Florida, where later he was seen with the in the classroom staring into space.
Mm-hmm.
But they had a very unusual thing happen, and he had a surface-to-air missile and snipers on top of the roof.
Yeah,
I saw the photograph of it.
Yeah, his brother had declared a state of emergency in the state. As I said, I think that when they came, he originally had scheduled a vacation for a couple weeks in Crawford. They came down on August 6th and said Bin Laden determined to strike inside the U.S. He extended his vacation by a couple of weeks. Strike still hadn't happened. And so he went to Florida, to his brother's state, where his brother locked down the state. I think that he knew something horrible was going to happen, but he didn't know what it was. He just didn't want to be in Washington or New York when it happened. That's my personal opinion. But I have no facts or observations or science to back that up other than just my personal opinion, and I may well be wrong. But, Linda, I you're right. Thank you for the call. Let's see here. Mark in Mississippi. Hey, Mark, what's up?
Hey, good afternoon, Tom.
Hey, Mark.
I just wanted to recognize that, no one has a choice of when they come into this world, if they're black or white, male or female, right?
Yep.
So that's God's given to us. So as a Christian, that should be your fundamental belief that, no one had a choice. And so when you're born into this world, and I was born into one in the 70s that inherited, Civil War, slavery, and the white domination, European, of the world.
Yeah.
Exploitation. That's where it all originally began. And now they try to switch the bait to, everything being blamed on Muslims.
Sure.
But this is the 150th anniversary of Civil War. And, when we do these celebrations, we should try to remember, instead of the pain from the cause, because that's America likes to see pain and killing and everything. Instead of working on that part, we should work on why, what's behind the Civil War, what's behind 9/11, why all these atrocities are happening, where instead of, revenge and trying to get back at people, we should try to understand the deep fundamental.
Yep, I'm absolutely with you, Mark. Very, very well said.
And with African Americans, we are twice, everything worst off in America, right?
Mm-hmm.
Most unemployed.
Yep.
Tell America fix the all. It's backyard. Clean this backyard. You can't go around the world trying to clean everyone else's backyard. So until reparations, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. We need, the average wealth of an African American family in the United States right now is a little under $6,000 total net assets. The average wealth of a white family in the United States is a little over $85,000. And before the crash, it was a little over 100,000 versus around 11,000. And that disparity is the consequence. That's white privilege. That disparity is the consequence of 5 centuries of slavery and legal apartheid and discrimination. And I agree. I don't have a specific solution with regard to reparations, how that should be done. I think that Lyndon Johnson started the process and started it in a really good way that helped lift a lot of people, both black and white, out of poverty, with the Great Society. But then he also brought us the war in Vietnam, which didn't do a whole lot for anybody. But I'm with you, Mark. I'm with you. Thank you very much for the call. Very, very well said. Norman in Atlanta. Hey, Norman, what's up?
Yeah, I'm just going to tag on the end of that conversation. When it comes to reparations, the only thing that I could possibly think that would be equitable and reasonable would be property, because I drive through areas like Iowa, and I see all these farms and stuff, and that's really the big disenfranchisement, you know, we don't have that history, you know.
Right.
None of our ancestors held land to where they could pass it down.
Well, not only that, your people were property. I mean, it's even worse than that.
Exactly. But the reason why I called in, the guy that called a minute ago talking about people claiming Jesus for this and Jesus for that, I understand where the guy's coming from, but I'm going to tell you what I'm sick of. I'm sick of people blaming everybody except for the people who did it. You know, conspiracies, George Bush is in the classroom. What is he supposed to do, run out of the classroom and go catch the people jumping out of the building? How ridiculous is that? I'm sick of people blaming everybody except for the people who did the stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. And who are the people who did the stuff?
Let me see. There was 19 people that were from Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. Well, they weren't all from Saudi Arabia,
propaganda.
But yeah.
Or is that propaganda?
Yeah. No, I think you're right. So in other words, you think that we should be blaming the guys who funded it, who, you know, the Mohammed Atta, the Osama bin Laden, and the guys who flew the planes. I'm with you.
Exactly.
I'm with you. They're the criminals.
Okay, now
let me make a point on this, Norman, if I may. Had George W. Bush done, you know, let me back up a little bit. Bill Clinton was faced with a terrorist strike in the United States, which was the largest terrorist attack in the history of this country, when the McMurrah building was blown up in Oklahoma City. And he could have done what Tim McVeigh believed he was going to do. Tim McVeigh had read the Turner Diaries, which is a novelized story in which a white Christian blows up a federal building in Oklahoma, and the federal government clamps down by taking away everybody's guns. And as a result of that, all the white Christians, the Protestants, rise up and they start killing off first people of color, first any government employees, secondly people of color, third the Jews, fourth the Catholics, and finally it's just the Protestants left, and they fight back the government and they finally have this paradise of America. That's what Tim McVeigh thought he was going to start. He thought he was going to start a war in the United States because the United States would overreact. And instead,
okay,
what Bill Clinton did was he said, this guy is crazy, he's a criminal, we're going to throw his ass in jail and fry him, and which is what he did. If George W. Bush had accepted the offer of the Taliban to turn Osama bin Laden over to a third-party country, over to send him over to The Hague for a trial, and put the guy on trial for his crimes, because the hijackers were already dead, if that had happened... If it had been dealt with the way that President Obama dealt with it, basically, you know, track the guy down who's responsible for it, then I'm totally with you, Norman. But instead, what we did for 8 years was we used this as an excuse. George W. Bush used this as an excuse to enrich his buddies, to have wars for political gain, to try and get himself reelected, to try to privatize Social Security in 2005. Remember, he said, I got all this political capital now from this war. I'm going to use this to privatize Social Security. I mean, this, I don't see how you can blame me for blaming him for that.
Can I respond to that?
Yes, sir. Yes,
okay.
We have a minute left. It's all yours.
Charles Manson thought he was going to start a race war by killing all those people, too.
That's
okay,
right.
Okay, we're dealing with two kooks. But all I'm saying, the difference between people like McVeigh is that it's not state-sponsored terrorism. You know, there is a such thing as state-sponsored terrorism, and that's a whole different
Afghanistan.
The
government of Afghanistan, the Taliban, had no idea that this was going on. This was not state sponsored. This was bin Laden.
They didn't know that Al Qaeda was in their country with training camp.
Yeah, they knew that, but they didn't know that they were doing 9/11. They had no idea.
Okay.
I'm telling you, you got to read the book, Killing the Cranes. This is not as simple as you think it is. And beyond that, we're out of time anyway. Norman, thank you for the call. We'll be back. It's 16 minutes past the hour, 6 o'clock here on the East Coast. We're live on 9/11 on Sirius XM.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And on Free Speech TV. We'll be back with your calls.
My fellow Americans, major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
The Battle of Iraq is one victory in a war on terror that began on September the 11th, 2001.
Apropos of the last caller, as I recall, Jerry Brown was governor of California when Charles Manson thought he was going to start a race war, as our last caller accurately said. And had Jerry Brown responded to that by bombing Arizona or invading Utah or saying, you know, Charles Manson had long hair, everybody with long hair gets arrested. I think there's a very real possibility that there would have been civil unrest in California and in the United States. But instead, he did the right thing. He did the same thing Bill Clinton did with Tim McVeigh. He said, this is the work of a criminal. We're going to track him down. We're going to put him in jail. And we're going to keep him there. And George Bush should have done that with Osama bin Laden, and we would be $6 trillion richer, and the world would be a better place. And the Muslim world would probably be united with us instead of against us. Bob in Pennsylvania. Hey, Bob, what's up?
Yeah, hi, Tom. Thanks for having me on. A while back,
you Bob, if you got us on a speakerphone, if you could take it off, it sounds awful, awful echoey.
No, it's not a speakerphone.
Oh, okay. All right.
Anyway, you mentioned Condoleezza Rice at the Genoa summit,
uh-huh.
where there was a threat of a plane hitting hitting the headquarters.
The hotel, yeah.
And
that was in June of 2001.
Yeah, and yet after 9/11, she testified that no one could have predicted that people would use a hijack a plane and use it as a missile to
right. In fact, she didn't use the word predicted. She said no one could have imagined that somebody would hijack an airplane and use it as a missile to take out a building, when that was exactly the reason why George Bush slept on an aircraft carrier in June of 2001 in the Mediterranean Sea instead of showing up in the hotel. You're absolutely right, Bob. Thank you for reminding us of that. Go ahead.
And that was under oath, and yet it was never mentioned by the mainstream media, and she was never challenged on it.
Oh, yeah. You want a long list of crimes from the Bush administration?
Well, just pertaining to 9/11 and yeah. why there would be so many lies about that. And I wonder if you were familiar with Norman Mineta's testimony to the 9/11 Commission.
I'm not specifically familiar with it. When the 9/11 Commission report came out, I skimmed through it. But like I said, I don't present myself as a 9/11 expert.
Yeah, he testified that as he was with Dick Cheney, as Flight 77 approached the Pentagon, and he said an officer repeatedly came in and updated Dick Cheney. He said the plane is 50 miles out, it's 30 miles out. Finally, he says when the plane is 10 miles out, he asked Dick Cheney, do the orders still stand? And according to Norman Mineta, who was there, he said that Cheney turned his head around and said, yes, of course the orders still stand. Have you heard anything different?
Yeah. Now, this is what we're hearing from Dick Cheney's autobiography, is that he authorized the military to start shooting down civilian planes and that they refused to take the order, to execute the order.
So, and the 9/11 Commission never wanted to know who this fellow was or what that order was.
Yeah.
I mean, if this guy was given a direct order to intercept this plane and he was derelict of duty, I mean, he would be a household name, the guy who, collaborated with.
No, Bob, I think you're absolutely right. As I said, there are far more questions than there are answers right now, and the 9/11 Commission just at the very. To cast it in the very most positive light possible, just scratch the surface. And of course, there's other ways to characterize it. Thanks a lot, Bob. Graf in Long Island, New York. Hey, Graf, what's up?
Hi, Tom. How are you? Thanks for doing this today, by the way.
Sure.
Appreciate it. I was listening to you before. You were talking about what happened on the morning of 9/11 and how disappointed you were that we went in one direction and not the other.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to kind of tell you my own story, and because I think that one of the things that happened in the aftermath of 9/11 is it led us into a decade of what I call a decade of binary thinking. Listen to this. The morning of 9/11, I was a teacher at the time. I was teaching high school in Queens, and about several miles to the north of the World Trade Center. We were able to see the buildings from there. And I got to school right around the time the first plane hit, and I went inside. I told the ladies in the office what had happened, and I could see the smoke in the sky, and I went upstairs to the cafeteria to get a better look, and I got up there just in time to see the second fireball. I didn't see the plane. And so a whole bunch of people, teachers, students, are gathered around these windows watching this happen as the smoke is pouring out of the towers. And somebody comes in, and to this day I don't remember who it was. I think it was probably a new teacher in the building who I didn't know. It was a big school. And he said, "See, that's why you got to vote Republican."
You're kidding.
And I don't remember if I said anything in response. I thought that was a kind of a really stupid thing to say in the moment, and I don't remember if I felt the need to point out that at that particular time we had a Republican president and a Republican Congress and a Republican governor and a Republican mayor.
Mm-hmm.
Just didn't seem appropriate. But you see, when did this happen, in the sense of when did we get from, you know, genuine bipartisanship, genuine patriotism, when did it turn into, you know, cynical partisanship? When did Rush Limbaugh start ordering his listeners to blame this on President Clinton?
Well, Limbaugh started in 87. I would suggest that it was in the 80s. I don't want to put this on Limbaugh's shoulders, but I would suggest that it, you know, Jude Winiski put together this memo in the late 70s, and then there was Lewis Powell in 74 put together a memo about, you know, building a conservative infrastructure, taking over the courts, taking over the schools, you know, business becoming politically active and things like that. And then Nixon put him on the Supreme Court a month later. Memo went to the just Google Powell memo. You know, it went to his best friend and next door neighbor, the president of the Chamber of Commerce. But then a couple years, year and a half after that, Jude Winiski wrote this memo about the two Santa Claus theory, where he said whenever Republicans are in power, they should spend like drunken sailors. Whenever Democrats are in power, they should scream about the deficit. The Republicans should scream about the deficit. And that began with the Reagan administration. And so if you're asking for a point in time when America really started this bifurcation, and by the way, that's also the point in time when the middle class's income started to flatline and the wealthy started to get really, really rich. That was the point in time when our jobs, our outsourcing started going crazy. That was the point in time when Reagan stopped enforcing the Sherman Antitrust Act and local malls, instead of being filled with mom and pop shops and local businesses, started being filled with national chains. I mean, that I point all of it right to the early 1980s, frankly.
Well, but I'm talking about like in the aftermath of 9/11. I mean, people talk about how the two parties came together and there was no partisanship and all this great feeling of patriotism.
For about 3 days.
Together, and George Bush's approval rating shot up to 90% for no particular reason.
Yeah.
But I cannot get out of my mind. And it really upsets me that this is my most vivid memory of 9/11 10 years later, is someone within minutes of this happening, before the towers even came down, within minutes of this happening, someone looks out the window and the first thought in his head is, that's why you got to vote Republican, even though we had Republicans in the White House, Congress, the governorship of New York, and the mayor of New York City were all Republicans.
The thing that astounds me is that George Bush has, you know, kind of been skating for 10 years now, basically, on this notion that somehow this didn't happen on his watch. You know, that he had no responsibility for this.
There were no attacks during the Bush administration.
We actually, you know, somebody, was it Condi Rice, said that recently? You know, we had no terrorist attacks during the Bush administration. And it's like, what? You know, what happened in 9/11?
Of course we did.
Yeah.
We did.
And so, I think your point is well taken. Graf, thank you very much for sharing your story with us. It's much appreciated. I think it's about time that we start looking at the history of what happened with a clearer eye, shall we say. 6:29 on the East Coast. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Back with more of your calls on this live 9/11 show from Washington, D.C. for Sirius XM Radio, simulcast on Free Speech TV.
Tonight, I can report to the American people and to the world that the United States has conducted an operation that killed Osama bin Laden, the leader of al-Qaeda, and a terrorist who's responsible for the murder of thousands of innocent men, women, and children.
Welcome back. 6:34 here in Washington, D.C., 3:34 on the West Coast. We are live. It's 9/11 for another half hour here. We will be live. And Chris, a special program we're doing for XM Sirius XM Radio, that is being simulcast by Free Speech TV on Dish Network and DirecTV. Chris in Columbus, Ohio. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Hi. For doing this program.
Sure.
You know, when I think about 9/11, I really, you know, have a lot of remorse for all the, you know, people that lost their lives. But the biggest thing that, you know, really, really, I guess, burns my blood and it just, you know, just really bothers me is that, you know, when our country decided to shut all the airplanes down, you know, we never even questioned the Bin Laden family. You know, the current administration, Bush administration, decided to put them on planes and give them a pass and let them go back to their country.
Right, about 200 of them.
Their lives, yeah, not for fear of their lives, but just because of the relationship was so close, you know, between, you know, Pop Bush, George Bush, and that oil conglomerate.
Well, Osama bin Laden's half-brother was the guy who bailed out George W. Bush when his Arbusto oil company was failing, and then a couple of years later died in a small plane crash in Texas.
You know, I just hope America wakes up. I mean, we're not celebrating, but, you know, observing 9/11. But, you know, we forgot all about Iran-Contra.
Yeah.
You know, where Ronald Reagan basically, you know, was selling drugs and buying guns, you know, from Noriega to, you know.
Yep.
And we just totally forgot about that. Bush Sr. gave Ali North a pass after Reagan was out of office. And we just keep voting Republicans in. And it never ceases to amaze me that we just don't follow history.
You know, I'll bet if a Democrat had been in the White House when 9/11 happened, the big news story 10 years later today that we would be talking about is how that Democrat let that happen on his watch. And then he flew the entire Bin Laden family out of the country without even debriefing them by the State Department or having the FBI interview any of them. And isn't that a crime and a horror? And in fact, I'll bet that president, had it been a Bill Clinton, he would have been impeached all over again. Chris, thanks a lot. Well said. Keith in Minnesota. Hey, Keith, what's up? Keith, you are on the air. Oh, I'm sorry. I pushed the button for Ernie. Ernie in Bishop, California. Hey, Ernie, what's up?
Well, Tom, I agree with you that something needs to be investigated. From the very beginning about Bin Laden, as you know, Clinton went after him, and he missed him twice. It seemed like Bin Laden was always one step ahead of him, like he was warned.
Yeah, like by ISI.
Whatever.
Yeah.
And then, of course, it seemed like Clinton wasn't in on the on what was going to happen. And then, of course, Monica Lewinsky. Everybody knows that Clinton was a womanizer since he was a governor, but yet it came out during this time. I'm just wondering, somebody should be investigating all these. And like you just mentioned, that Bin Laden was given a free pass every time Bush was involved with him.
Yeah. Yeah. And, for example, they had him cornered in Tora Bora, and the Marine commander went to Bush and said, you know, I need 1,000 men to close off this pass. We've got him cornered. And Bush said no. I mean, you know, what's that about? What's that about? You're absolutely right, Ernie. There's so much we need to know. Keith in Minnesota. Hey, Keith, what's up?
Hi, I'm just, before the break, you're talking about, the time of Ronald Reagan. I just think that, and I'd like your opinion on this, that if they hadn't gotten rid of the fairness doctrine and now they finally killed the thing off, but if they hadn't gotten rid of that, it would be a much different world. Rush Limbaugh couldn't even exist.
Well, I'm not sure that Rush Limbaugh wouldn't exist and wouldn't be popular for that matter, but Americans would be well informed. You wouldn't have, you know, 60% of 60-80% of Republicans still believing that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. America would be a more well-informed place. We would have the equivalent of the Canadian Broadcasting System and the CBC and the British Broadcasting Service, and only it would be delivered in large part by our commercial broadcasters, as it used to be. You know, you'd have the old Walter Cronkites and Chet Huntleys and David Brinkley's. And I realize I'm dating myself, but for the young people who don't know what I'm talking about, back before Reagan, we used to actually have news in the United States. I used to be a newsman, and this from 1969 to 1976. or 77, I did, or not from 16, you know, on and off. I was a DJ for three of those years, but I, for 7 years, I did the news at WITL, AM and FM, Lansing, Michigan. I'm familiar with it. Keith, you're spot on. Good point. Excellent. Patrick in Oregon. Hey, Patrick, what's up?
I don't know, but Father Judd was a Catholic chaplain for the firefighters and openly gay priest.
Mm-hmm.
Went into the Twin Towers just before they collapsed and said, I do not intend to let these men die alone. They came in and said, Father, you've got to get the heck out of here. You're going to be killed. He said, I'm not leaving. He didn't leave. The building collapsed. He died.
He was the first body discovered, wasn't he? One of the first?
Yeah. One of the first. And when nobody knew it, but he was in there on his 21st birthday and in the recovery from alcohol and drugs.
Wow.
An amazing man.
The 21st anniversary, you mean, of his sobriety?
Sobriety, yeah.
Yeah, that's remarkable. Patrick, thank you for sharing that story with us. There are a lot of stories of nobility that came out of 9/11. Julie in Denver. Hey, Julie, thank you for listening.
Hi. Hi, thanks for taking my call. I want to say that it just really, for years now, I've been trying to tell people, warn people about what's going on. And we've got the corporations and the Christian Taliban running this country. Unfortunately, a president, and I was a Democrat for over 40 years, our president won't even stand up to these people.
I don't think he can.
Christianity has become part of the government, which just disgusts me completely because we're not all Christians.
Yep.
And
yep. This whole faith-based initiative.
40 people I consider as being Taliban, just like the Muslim Taliban that we're killing in Afghanistan. Why should these people get to live while they're doing the same thing to us? And they've taken away our freedoms and everything that this country stood for.
Well, I don't think you're calling for the death of anybody, are you?
But in that case,
calling them out, I'm totally with you. We never should have started faith-based initiative programs in the United States. And the modern large version of it actually started during the Clinton administration of giving money to churches.
Right.
And that's how Jerry Falwell, became rich. And Pat Robertson sold his Christian Broadcasting Network for $1 billion with a B dollars and put it in his own pocket. And this was a nonprofit. And what we've seen now is the rise of, I agree with you, a Christian Taliban. Thank you for the call, Julie. I don't have a better way to describe it than that. El Cid in our chat room over at TomHartmann.com in Seattle. Hey, El Cid. Hang on just a minute. Let me push the right button.
Well,
El Cid, what's up?
I met you in Seattle on the boat cruise, and it was just great.
Oh, thank you.
And you signed my books. Yeah, I just wanted to remind everyone, and, I'm not telling it, I'm preaching to the choir, but in Operation Enduring Freedom in 1989, around Christmas time, when we invaded Panama to get Noriega, there were at least 3,000 civilian collateral deaths. I mean, we wound up bombing a lot of the slums around the area Noriega was, or we thought he was. And, it's September 11th, 73, the coup in Chile, the way we destroyed the Iraqi infrastructure, the water system, the sewage system.
You mean the Chilean infrastructure.
People died in the towers. But, there's been an awful lot of suffering around the world that we've caused, and I just hope people don't forget that,
Yes. Excellent point. Excellent point.
I love your show, Tom. Big follower.
Thanks, El Cid. Thanks very much, and thanks for dropping in the chat room. It's great to have you there. Beth in Lexington, Kentucky. Hey, Beth, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I really enjoy your show today, as usual.
Thank you.
I just wanted to pass along that I had lunch with a friend of mine the other day who I used to live with, and she was friends with a flight attendant on the Flight 93.
Oh, my.
And we were discussing, Dick Cheney's book, and I was like, well, what do you think about the fact that perhaps that flight was shot down? And she said that she talks to the woman's husband, and he talks about it, and he says, no, what actually happened was that the terrorists had taken over the cockpit, and it was locked, and that the passengers rushed it, and were going to getting in, and they took the plane down, straight down to the ground.
Yeah.
And it's very disturbing, but by the same token, I'm glad to know that Cheney didn't have anything to do with that.
Although he had given an order for that to happen.
And
he's complaining in his book about the fact that the military ignored his order to shoot, another 20 or 30 airplanes out of the sky?
Yes, absolutely phenomenal to me that this man is not a war criminal.
Well, he is a war criminal. What's phenomenal is that he's not in the dock at The Hague like Milosevic was.
Yes, correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yep.
So anyway, it was nice to know, and she was in the wrong place at the wrong time. She flew once a month and wasn't supposed to be on that flight.
Yeah.
So anyway, it is nice to know that that didn't happen, because I've heard some conspiracy theories about it.
Oh, yeah. We always will. I mean, we'll never know. Beth, thank you for the call. I've got to move along here. Bill in Fort Lauderdale, we have just about a minute till this break. Bill, it's all yours. What's up?
Yeah, hey, Tom, I want to thank you for your programming. We shall never forget. I mean, I've had a hard time watching a lot of the coverage and reading anything about, you know, of course, the damaging aspects of this event, but we have all seemed to have forgotten the anniversary of what happened in Chile when the CIA moved in there on September 11th in 1973 and created the coup, which put Pinochet into power.
Now, El Cid mentioned that, too. I did not, I did not realize that was 9/11/73 that we overthrew Pinochet. That's amazing. That's amazing.
Yeah,
and it's almost like karma.
Out there with the prisoner of war at that time.
Yeah, and a lot of people died as a result of we're installing Pinochet, rather. Thank you very much, Bill, for the call, and thanks for the reminder. It is 6:46 in Washington, D.C. We'll be back in just a minute with more of your calls here.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Back with your calls on our special program for SiriusXM Radio, simulcast on Free Speech TV. Minutes to 7, the last 10 minutes of our live 9/11 program here from special for SiriusXM Radio on simulcast by Free Speech TV. And I'm going to try and fly through these calls a little faster than normal, so I hope you don't take it personal if I seem to be pushing you to... Hey, Robin in Maine, you're on the air.
Hi. I guess my big question is, what happened to Oklahoma City, with Timothy bombed the federal building and so on and so forth? I mean, did we confiscate them in any way? I just get kind of upset.
That did not bring about a Patriot Act. That did not bring about a national gun confiscation. That didn't bring about, a jihad against Christian militia, which is what McVeigh thought it would. I mean, it was the second anniversary of Waco. He was trying to make a point, and it didn't. And thank you, Robin, for the call. Bill Clinton did the right thing. And it creates a huge, vivid distinction between him and George W. Bush. Candace in West Virginia. Hey, Candace.
Yes. Hi, Tom. Good to talk to you. As far as 9/11, as far as stemming from the last vestiges of oil,
mm-hmm.
our insane, insatiable appetite for oil sadly will promote more 9/11s. And I'm saying go green, and I'll get off.
Okay, very well said, and thank you for your brevity, Candace. Dave in California. Hey, Dave, what's on your mind today?
Hi. Hey, I love your show. I just want to say, if we want to take back control of this country, the working class, we have to beat the corporations at their own game. They already have all of our retirement money, and they gamble with it. What we need to do is form our own corporation. We believe these truths to be self-evident, Inc. Each person for a $10 share has one vote. Have it secure. And once it's proven that it's a secure place to put your money, people could put their retirement money into it and earn more money than they get from Wall Street because of all the money that's sucked out by the CEOs.
Dave, lay it out and put it up on a website, and I'll promote it. Thanks a lot for the call. David in California. Hey, David.
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
Good. What's up?
First, I just want to say thanks for being on today. That's great, man. That
sure.
makes me really happy. And second, I'd just like to ask you what you think the reasons are that all of our regulations have actually gotten so weak following 9/11 under the Republican leadership.
Because there's more money to be made by big corporations in a deregulated environment, than there's more safety for people and better wages for working people in a more heavily regulated environment. And the Republicans go with the big corporations and their profits. I think it's
wow,
I think it's
that
you
sounds
know
it's, patriotic, don't it?
Yeah, good point, David. Excellent point. Thank you very much. Oh, and well said. Carrie in Springfield, I'm assuming is that Mississippi or Illinois or Missouri, or there's a bunch of Springfields
out
there. Oregon. Okay.
Oregon.
All right. So what's up?
Do you think they could have legally demolished the towers because they were built in the middle of the Hudson River on a landfill?
Are you suggesting that this was a way of demolishing the towers that otherwise couldn't have been demolished?
Right. They were falling over anyways.
Yeah. Huh.
Like the wind could have been blowing them over. They were afraid the wind might blow them over because they were built in defiance of nature in the first place.
Oh, that's very interesting. Gary, I have no idea. It's not a theory that I'm familiar with. Don't know. Bob in Colorado. Hey, Bob, what's up?
Oh, I just suggest that maybe people should read the book like The Shock Doctrine or
by Naomi Klein
or The Black Swan or Willful Neglect, especially.
Yeah.
I mean, we're in danger here, and it should be observed, and people should know this. Talk to you later.
Okay. Thank you very much. Good to hear from you. Betsy in Seattle. Hey, Betsy, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I think the media should have done a better job in tying the Enron story with the Bush family interests in the timeline of 9/11. I think our country has been thoroughly Enronized since 9/11.
Well, that's a good point. And leading up to 9/11, you know, and I would take that again. I don't know if you were listening an hour and a half ago when we played that clip of Jimmy Carter saying we will never again import into this country any more oil than we did in 1977. And this was 1978. And he laid out a serious, solid energy plan for the United States. Reagan repealed it two years later when he became president. And we haven't had an energy policy since then. And that, in my opinion, leads us right to 9/11. Jimmy Carter, there's a great thread about Jimmy Carter over at democraticunderground.com right now. I think one of the greatest presidents of the 20th century one of the few presidents who never started a war and refused to profit off being president. Wouldn't take a penny. He said he was modeling himself after Harry Truman, who also refused to profit off being president. Thank you, Betsy, for the call. Great to hear from you. Doris in Flint, Michigan. Hey, Doris, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Thanks. I called a long time ago during the health care debate, and I'm still fighting that one.
Okay.
I just wanted to say in 9/11, all grief to all those that died, and I'm sorry for all of that. But the issue that always remains with me is I remember hearing the Republicans being angry at Obama for apologizing for anything. And I just want to say I see patients, and if they're from Iraq, or they're in that involved and been hurt by us, I say, I am so sorry. I'm an American. I'm so sorry. I apologize for what happened to you by my government. And the most is that I paid for that they took my money. I apologize for that. I think apologizing when you're wrong is a sign of strength, not a sign of weakness.
I'm with you. Well said. Thank you, Doris. Sean in Las Vegas. Hey, Sean.
Hey, apologizing calls for morality. I want to say this really fast. I think that many people had premonitions about this happening. The night before 9/11, when I was clearing the kitchen, I kept hearing the voice, oh, the humanity of it all, oh, the humanity. This is not a call for the crazies, but when such evil is perpetrated, we don't know by whom and how, though, and all the exacts, I think the earth feels it. I think humanity feels it.
I do, too. Thank you. Thank you, Sean. I'm absolutely with you on that. I think that there is a collective psyche. Brenda in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Brenda, what's up?
Hey, not much, Tom. Good to hear you. I'm on XM, so I never get to hear you live.
If you listen on the app or on the website, we're live on Sirius XM on their phone app and on their website. But just FYI,
I'm a truck driver, so it's kind of kind of the thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But we have a little less than a minute. It's all yours.
An observation of mine is just when we Americans are ready to raise our standards and quit settling for this extreme mediocrity in all things. I mean, having war criminals as leaders and, you know, all the way down to, you know, the shenanigans of corporations and, you know, just we just settle all the time. When we hold our standards higher, I think, when we're willing to do that.
Yes. Like Franklin Roosevelt saying, no person shall become a millionaire because of this war.
Exactly.
And enforcing it.
We should, as people, we're the government, and we need to stand our feet, you know, on our feet and stand up.
Yep. Well said. Brenda, thank you very much, and my apologies to the rest of you still on hold trying to get in. Thanks so much for being with us today on this special program for Sirius XM Radio, simulcast by Free Speech TV, on 9/11 from Washington, D.C. Tom Hartman. We'll see you on the air tomorrow. Have a great weekend. Oh, and don't forget, democracy begins with you. Tag, you're it.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.